doing at the time, or the general makeup of Marion, and I'll ask you things like that as we go through. But this, as you'll recall, was in 6th and 7th of August, 1930. Mm-hmm. I think the shooting took place on the night of the 6th. Mm-hmm. And then the 7th is the night when the lynching took place. Mm-hmm. Now, if you just give me your name.
I'm Von Treber.
And how old are you?
79.
79. Were you born in Marion?
No, born in Markle.
Markle.
Yeah.
When did you come to Marion?
Well, Dad came over here when I was just a baby to work in the old Westerman Rowing Mill. My mother's father ran a butcher shop in Markle. Dad worked for him a little while, and then he came back and went to work in the Westerman, and they lived out on the west side pretty close to the old York Inn, one of the old famous buildings at that time, you know, out there. Later, he left here and went down into the oil field around Liberty Center over there, you know, and worked in the oil field until the oil field played out, and worked for the MB&E Construction Company in there when they built the interurban line from Marion to Bluffton and from Marion to Kokomo, the old KM&W. And then Dad left when the interurban line was finished. He got a job with the Cloverleaf Railway at Van Buren, and we moved to Van Buren and stayed there until I was in the eighth grade in school. That's when we came to Marion.
Did you graduate from Marion School?
Graduated from the Marion School, yeah. And I took a job as a apprentice in a sheet metal shop when I was just a kid, and put in 3 years in there as a sheet metal apprentice under W.A. Brown, an old-timer in here, you know, and stayed with it then in the sheet metal game for a long while until I finally got mixed up in politics and got promoted out of it.
You did some boxing, too, didn't you?
Sir?
You did some boxing.
Oh, yeah. Following World War One, in there in 1920, 21, 22, I got into the thing. So I found out I couldn't lick the world and got married and decided to do my fighting at home.
What was your first job in politics?
The 1934 primary. Fellow came to me and said, "Why don't you run for an office this time? Be good advertising." I told him, "Well, Lord, I have no political ambition or anything of the sort. The only thing of it is, I know nothing about it. I've never been mixed up in politics. I really don't know anyone around that has about anything." Well, he said, "Well, why don't this man, a friend of mine, said, well, run anyway. It'll be good advertising. It won't cost you much. Maybe you will get a beating, but in the primary, but it'd be worthwhile to try it." So I bet. And I run in the primary and almost got elected. If I'd have known what I know now, I would have got elected.
What'd you run for?
Run for sheriff.
Oh, did you?
And that's in 1934. Well, then, you see, those were 2 year terms then.
Yeah.
And in 1936, I blundered into it the next time, and that time I did get nominated and elected, and went in office January 1st, 1937, and then was re-elected for another two-year term, 36, 38 is a two-year
rough
off there, and of course that ended the sheet metal. I sold this up, got out of it, put in 4 years in there as sheriff. Then I run for recorder, and when I did that, the old politics caught up with me. That was the year the Republicans went out and slaughtered every Democrat that was in the county. They really lit on us hard that year, and I got it along with the rest.
Yeah.
So. And I thought no more about getting in. I'd been about 8 years, and I'd been out of office about 8 years. And some of my friends come to me, and one of my old deputies there, John Gormley, that worked for me the first time, and he wanted me to run again. And I run and was nominated and elected. And put in that 2 years, and at the end of that time, then they caught up with me again. That time, they promoted me clear out of it. they got all of them while they were at it, though. It wouldn't have been so bad if it had been just me alone,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Everybody got smacked that year. And it was quite an experience.
Going back to this 1930, can you, do you remember much about before this happened? There were apparently some robberies that were going on later on.
They were having some, of course, I was acting as a special deputy, but I had very little to do. We've helped two or three or four times on stuff in there, myself and some of our other, my friends in the American Legion, the boys down there. And we really didn't do any police work, but they were having a lot of trouble around in this area here, and some complaints of stick-ups and mugging and everything else, you know. And while I knew a little about it, I was, had no actual, what you'd call, official standing in the matter, told me just to help out whenever they, something turned up that I could do.
Do you remember the day that this Dieter boy was shot? Do you remember hearing about that? Or
I didn't hear about it till long in the afternoon, or about noon. My brother lived at that time in Evansville. He was managing a laundry down there, and having it pretty rough financially, and I went out and bought a old Model T Ford, and we drove it out on West 9th Street, and I got into a private garage out there and started to overhaul the thing with the intention of taking it down to my brother on Sunday, you see. That's what we'd planned to do, to drive it down and give it to him. And we heard the rumors of the trouble down there about noon, but we didn't know what it was all about.
Now, this was about the shooting of the Dieter boy?
We heard about the shooting and sort of dangerous condition of the mob gathering down there, you know.
Who was with you?
Oh, that I can't say. I was alone most of the time, but some of the fellows from downtown came out, and one of the fellows came out and told me that there's trouble down there. And
where was that on 9th Street where you were?
Out on West 9th.
Whereabouts?
Out towards the Malibu, fairly close to the Malibu. And they told me that there might be trouble, and that we fellows who had, were specials might get called in. Well, I didn't hear any more about it then, any more comment on it until the word comes. Someone come out to tell us. One of the fellows from downtown came out, or phoned out, perhaps, for us to get down there just as quick as we could.
What time of day was that? Do you have any idea?
Oh, that was long in the evening. It was about just before dark. And we hiked down there, myself and three or four other fellows who was also had special badges.
You walked down?
No, I drove down.
Drove down
and left the car. And by that time, it was all over with. They had, the mob had broken into the jail. Didn't have to do much breaking to tell the truth. And had yanked these fellows out and hanged two of them on the bars on the outside of the jail. And they had cut them down just before we got there, and had them hanging down to the courthouse. And they had three or four others up in that wing upstairs. When as I remember, when the mob started to break in the jail, they started to sledge the hinges off of the door out there. The sheriff, or one of his deputies, can't say which it was, unlocked the door and threw the keys out in the yard. And the mob just run right in and up the stairway. They asked where these fellows were, and up to the stairway and grabbed them and yanked them out of there. And when they got them downstairs, they hung them there on the bars of the jail.
Which side?
I am not certain about that. See, they were cut down when I got there. But in a little bit then, of course, after that had happened, the city police was in on the deal. They were trying to break it up and help the deputy sheriffs as much as they could.
And but by the time I got downtown, the bodies had been transferred down and hung there on a tree right at the northeast corner of the courthouse. It's still there. And when they hung there till pretty dark.
It's on the northeast corner.
Excuse me?
Northeast corner?
Yeah, the northeast corner. And I remember well, as soon as we got there, the people were beginning to mill around all over everywhere. A lot of them were pulling out and getting away from there. They knew they were sickened out by the mess, you know. I remember the coroner who lived over around Matthews came to me when I was standing along the side and said, what do you think I should do? Do you think we should cut these bodies down? And I said, well, it looks like the thing is fairly well over with as far as this is concerned. I wouldn't recommend you do anything with it at all for the time being. And he said, well, I think that's good advice. Don't believe it will. So we just left them hang a while till the crowd got thinner and then they were cut down.
You have any idea what time that was when you talked to him?
Must have been, well, it was dark then. I imagine that must have been about 7, along in there, 6 or 7. And they were cut down in about a half hour or so after that. And the mob started to break up. People around there, a lot of them sightseers, they see the... Somewhere along the line, they got that rope out of one of the hardware stores here, the rope that they used. It was new rope. They got.
It was new rope?
It was a rope, yeah.
New rope?
Yeah, a rope on each of them. They just got a hank of about a half, well, it was about 3/8 inch. I used to have a piece of it. I may have it upstairs there yet, I don't know. But after they cut them down, they took them to the undertaking shop in there, you know, and of course the coroner went ahead with his inquest on the deal, and about that, but in the meantime, they had called, someone had, I think some leaders among some colored people here, called Indianapolis and got a hold of the mayor and asked for the National Guard up here, and they declared an emergency, and the National Guard come rolling in that night.
You think they got this rope out of a hardware store downtown?
I think they did, yeah. I think it was either Marion Hardware or the old Hogan McKinney store. I'm not sure just which.
Where would those have been located?
The Marion Hardware was on where the Ball store is on the corner of 5th and Washington. And the Hogan McKinney's was second door east of Washington Street on the south side of the square.
Okay.
They were both old-time stores. It was one of the two that they got it out of. And the first of the National Guard got in there before morning. And I don't remember the exact time, but they got martial law and the thing, you know. And we pulled out the next day after that and drove down to Evansville. I know on the way down we had that Marion sign on our car. And everywhere we stopped, we had a mob out to hear about it, you know.
Oh, is that right?
But what happened then for... The next 2 or 3 days, we didn't have much to do with it. We were down in Evansville.
How well did you know the sheriff?
Oh, how long did I know him?
How well?
Oh, I like anything else. We knew him when we saw him and all. He wasn't any particular friends or anything of the sort. But
what kind of guy was he, you know?
Oh, he was not a bad sort of a man. He's an ex-policeman, but he was bullheaded as could be, and he wouldn't believe it was possible for that to happen.
You think he knew that something was going to happen?
Oh, there wasn't any doubt about it. About everybody around there knew about it, that they were going to try that. And this mob picked up and got the rope and started for the jail. And as it went, it got bigger all the way. I think there was quite a crowd around the jail there to start with when these fellows come, when they broke into the... But as I remembered, of course I didn't see this, but as I remembered it, when they started sledging the hinges off of the jail, one of the sheriff's deputies, they'd locked themselves in, you know, either that or the sheriff himself, I don't know which, came to the door and threw the keys, the ring of keys out in the yard. And they picked it up and walked right in, and then things began to really roll.
Did you ever hear anything about them hanging a shirt out over at the city jail, a bloody shirt?
No.
Did you ever hear anything about that?
No, never heard of that. I do know that when we got there, myself and a couple of other fellows went down with me, whom I don't remember anymore. The time we got down there, the thing was all, it had happened, it was over. I have no knowledge of the actual hanging, only what I've heard.
Well, they say that that they piled some crates and things under and tried to light them on fire. Did you see that?
I didn't see that, no. When they were hanging at the courthouse, they hung, as you could see, they're pretty high. They were, I imagine their feet were about 8 foot off the ground, both of them.
They both hung on the same tree?
Yeah, on the same one. You can see there in that
picture.
On
the same limb, do you know?
No, I don't think it was. I think they were on two separate limbs in there. But there were three or four other colored fellows upstairs in that ward where they broke in up there. And there was just a question. They were a little bit, from what I've heard, as to how many they were going to take. They almost started to take all of them. Some of them talked their way out of the deal. These other fellows was just in there on misdemeanor stuff, you know, didn't mount anything.
Did you know any of those fellows that were indicted for the lynching?
Oh, I knew several of them, yes. They were just ordinary citizens around here. They had almost nothing to do with it outside of the fact that they took a part in it. And who was the main instigator of the hanging, I can't say. But I do know that they blamed it, some of them here, on the Ku Klux, that the Ku Klux leaders had lots to do with it.
You say, you think the sheriff was a member?
I'm almost sure that he was. In fact, the matter is, this is off the record now. I saw the sheriff in a Ku Klux uniform out there, smack a fellow's ears down funny that run a Model T Ford through the a Klan parade here. Fellow drove through a Klan parade with a Model T, and a bunch of the Klansmen grabbed him, and one of whom smacked him down and just batted him around all over everywhere, and his mask came off, and it was the sheriff.
When did that happen?
Well, that happened sometime before this other thing came. It had been probably 2 years that had been going on off and on, you know.
Was that here in town?
Klan parades every so often and so on like that. That, however, is something that it's a lot of that's hearsay and poor memory. I wouldn't use it over you because okay. It wouldn't be anything. But I do know that Jake Campbell had warning of it. Now, I do know that they could have got him out. There isn't any doubt about that. They had plenty of time to do it, but he just wouldn't believe it could happen. And then I do know that he wouldn't defend them when the thing finally got out of hand and started. What he should have done, he should have seven different locks between the front door and that cell block upstairs. And if he'd have been the kind of a man he should have been, he'd have locked every door behind him and taken these fellows clear to the top of the jail. And by the time they could ever have blown or torn down all those jails, they'd have had the National Guard here and help from outside. You see, at that time, the state police was pretty light. They didn't have very many men. I think they had two in Grant County was all. They couldn't count on them for anything or anything from Indianapolis. The state police was a kind of a embryo thing then, you know. It was very, very little actual force in behind it.
Let me ask you something. In 1930, how far out of town would you say that the VA hospital was?
Oh, it's about downtown out where it is now, where it was at that time.
Well, I mean, where the city wasn't spread out that far then.
No.
It was kind of out in the country, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was out at least a full mile. There was a little collection of houses around the VA hospital, but it was a full mile north before you got down around 38th Street.
Did you ever hear of a section called Dark Secret?
Yeah, that was east on 38th Street, east of the Veterans Hospital, or it wasn't the VA hospital then. It was the old Soldier's Home, National Home for Disabled Veterans.
Oh,
you see, that was before.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And
well, that's
the
good.
The NHDVS, National Home for
Disabled
Veteran Soldiers.
I see.
And now it was at least from the home corner and the group about a half a dozen saloons and a few other things right around. That's about all was there. From there down to 38th Street, there was almost no one lived in there. Very few scattered houses. But that dark secret was a wild one back in the old days. There's all sorts of tales. Now, this is not a thing that you could, it's only just between the two of us on this. They claimed that every so often on payday, those old boys got about $10-$12 a month. They didn't get very much. They'd go down along a river down in that, what they called the dark secret then, and every so often one of them would get battered in the head and buried out there. The supposition was there were several of them come up missing after payday that they got clipped out there and buried.
Was there ever, as I understand, that was right on this side of the river?
Yes,
down
just
in there.
Down to the river. There was
Did you ever hear of a place down in there called Pete's Barbecue?
Yes, I remember the name.
Was that down in there, do you know?
I never hung around down in there at that time in there. That was a good place for anyone to stay away from. As long as I had all one piece, I hadn't lost anything down in there. I stayed out of it.
Was there anything on the other side of the river?
Not that I remember. There used to be a big old bridge that fell down eventually. An odd man in an automobile hit one of the supports. If I remember, that was one of the old-style suspended-type iron bridge.
I think that's right.
Somebody coming in there with a truck hit it, and the bridge collapsed and dumped him in the river. And that was when they built the new bridge out there.
What did you say?
Macbeth Evans.
Oh, yeah, he's the glass company. We were out there looking at the glass company. Remember the old
Macbeth
Evans?
Macbeth Evans glass was right on the east side of the railroad track on East 38.
Yeah.
On the northeast side of the railroad track. And Macbeth was a big plant, a big one.
So I was out kind of in an isolated area then in those days, right?
It was out fairly well. And there were a while between gambling and bootlegging and a few other things. Those old soldiers didn't have anything to do, only spend their $15, and boy, they really did it.
Do you remember what kind of cars that the police were using then? Do you have any idea?
No. No, I don't remember exactly. Don't remember. I know for a while they didn't even have automobiles. I remember when they had some horses and a horse-drawn wagon. And all the patrolmen were on foot, downtown.
Did you know any of the people that were indicted? There was a Charles Lennon.
Lennon was supposed to have been. This is another thing that can't be. I'd rather you wouldn't choose my name in connection, but Lennon was the leader of it.
You think
as
he was?
I understand. I think he was. He was a taxi driver here, Charlie Lennon.
Then he was. I think he killed somebody later on, in about 1940, and was sent to prison.
Seemed like he did. That's dim in my mind.
Did you ever hear of a guy named Asa Davis? A.S.A. Davis. Asa Davis?
I've heard the name.
Yeah.
Don't recall
Chester Pease?
Who?
Chester Pease?
Yeah, there's a colored fellow by the name of Chester Peak.
No, this is Pease. P-E-A-S-E.
Pease, oh.
Pease.
Oh, this colored fellow, Peak, was Homer Peak. Wrong one. Chester Pease. Another name from ancient history.
Then there was a fellow by the name of Robert Bashar. Who owned a restaurant sometime.
I remember his name, too.
You have any idea where that was, that restaurant that he owned?
Bashar? No, not now. Don't recall it. Generally, I can think of the...
Philip Boyd.
Yes, there was a fellow named Boyd that was in there, too.
Do you think those guys were likely to have been involved, or was that just somebody that they picked up at the... that they saw at the scene.
So
it's hard for me to tell. I can't tell whether they...
Well, as I remember, the police didn't make any arrests that night. I don't recall of anyone that the police
didn't.
Arrested. Not
That's
one.
Right.
And in fact, the matter is, they were just tickled to death to see the National Guard come in because it was getting plenty rough. They were all scared stiff. They didn't know what was going to happen out of that. It had one of these things that no one would have believed was possible in a quiet, sleepy old town like this, you know. But this bunch that was in there, Charlie Lennon was supposed to have been another off-the-record proposition, but he was listed, and it was common
belief, but he was the main leader of the whole works. And these other names you mentioned were mixed up in it, too. But there was a lot of
people out of Fairmount, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was people from Fairmount. See, this Dieter boy, the one that was killed, lived at Fairmount. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you a little something else off the record. This girl, Hoot Ball's daughter, Mary Ball, I believe her name was, had been playing with these colored fellows, and she's acting as a decoy. She'd pick up somebody downtown, and they'd drive out in a car out there on Luger Creek, it was, out east of town there, a couple of miles. They'd drive out there, and she's working with these blacks. And a carload of them would follow them out there, and about the time they'd pull down into the weeds along the creek, and these niggers in there would jump them, you know, and hold them up. And
there
were several holdups in there. Fellows that went out there with a squirrel. And this Dieter boy put up a fight. Now, most of these other people, a lot of them were married men, and they weren't talking. They didn't want their name into it, and they were just tickled to death to get out of there any way they could, you know. So they turned over what money they had on them and beat it out of there rather than stay.
Well, you think she actually was a decoy on some of those things?
Yeah, I think she was. Now, that's my own opinion. But it wasn't just an accident that she was out there. She'd been going out there before. I'm practically sure of that.
And, did you know her dad?
No, I never did. Hoot Ball, they called him. I think he did some blacksmith work and general labor work out there on the west side, out towards the Malville or Marion.
Well, he had a brother. Did you ever know his brother or hear of his brother?
No.
I don't know his name.
No, I don't know the name. But things traveled along pretty lively there for a little while. You know, you can't believe that a thing like that would happen in a little quiet community like this, you know. But that Ku Klux business got pretty doggone rough. Those fellas in there, a lot of them were good citizens, normally, you know, but they'd been whipped up to an edge where they were ready for anything.
Do you have any idea what kind of gun those guys used that night? Did you ever see it or hear about it or anything?
No, never did. Never did hear.
Did you ever hear of a guy by the name of David Fansler, F-A-N-S-L-E-R?
Yes, I remember the name. I don't know the circumstances. Don't recall it. But there was a lot of them were in on the deal.
How do you do? How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Nice to meet you. Well, pretty
you know,
good.
Larry, I'll tell you, I remember, I know Dad just mentioned this, I forgot about years ago, you had that picture, the glossy picture.
Yeah.
And he did have a piece of that original rope. Yeah. I don't know whether that'd be any interest to you. Now, you did have a piece of that rope, didn't you?
Yeah.
I remember
I got
that.
A little piece upstairs up in the box, about that long. But,
let me ask you something. Was there a restaurant someplace on the courthouse square, or more than one? Do you recall?
Well, there was a Greets had a restaurant right across the street from the Spencer Hotel, right west of the Spencer Hotel, and there was two more, Jim Rollis's place and so on down there. That was on 4th Street, west of the courthouse, in that same block, in there. There was John Mickus and his brother George had a restaurant in there. And then I think there was one over on the North Square. There was a little restaurant and a few other assorted things, including a bootleg outfit and a gambling joint and a few other things that runs along with a restaurant upstairs, downstairs in the basement. That was
Did you know the prosecutor? Harley Hardin?
Yeah, I know him well.
What kind of guy was he?
Didn't have more backbone than a jellyfish just between the two of us. That
okay.
Leave me out of that, but because the man's dead, and it wouldn't help anybody to bring that on. But Hardin was a nice fellow, as far as that's concerned, but there was always a doubt in my mind as to whether he's a fellow that should have been on any kind of prosecution job. I think just between the two of us.
What about the judge, O.D. Clausen?
Clausen was all right. He was a good man, but he was old-fashioned, and he was I got along with him fine while I was sheriff. He was judge while I was sheriff. I got along with Clausen all okay.
But he was pretty set in his ways, went along in there. I don't think he himself had anything whatever to do with the deal.
No, I just, he was just the judge in the process, and I was trying to get some idea what type of...
Hardin, as prosecutor, was, of course, the thing was all over with before he'd come into the deal, but I'd had a little experience with him later myself as sort of a personal proposition. He was attorney here while I was sheriff, you know, and he...
Wasn't Campbell the Republican county chairman at the time this happened?
He was prominent in the party, but I don't remember whether he was chairman.
I think maybe he was the chairman.
He might have been. The records would have to show it. But old Jake was all right, but the thing with him was, like all the police in those days, they was taking the easy way. They didn't want to get involved in anything that was going to be any real work in connection with it.
What was it in those days? What was the shortest way between here and Fairmount?
Right straight out Washington Street. I'm telling you wrong. The shortest, the usual way of going was go through Gas City. Go out to Gas City, you know, and from around Lincoln Boulevard to Gas City, or across 38th Street.